you have to figure out what are your goals? What are you trying to share? What messages do you want to share? And then you go from there. Personally, I reached out to people that I knew in the beginning because that made me more comfortable as I was getting used to the podcasting space, and it's easier.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
Hey, podcaster. It's Adam Adams, and I'm excited to have you today. Thank you for jumping on. And today's going to be special because the guest that we have has actually been featured in Forbes and as a TEDx speaker, which is kind of rad, and not everybody can say that. And so just so you know, Crystal, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions of how did you get on that? Because there's some really cool stuff. Crystal's also writing a book right now. Her podcast is meant for people, adults that are interested in living a fulfilling life, thriving both professionally and personally. And you can find the link to her podcast by scrolling down. It's already in the show notes. And Crystal's full bio is also in the show notes. Crystal and our team, Grow Your Show, we've been working together for about a year, almost coming up on a year. I just noticed that today because we're sending you out a monthly report. So awesome stuff. When did you start your podcast? It was a little bit before we started working together. Is that right?
Yeah, it was actually early 2020. Now that I think back, and thank you for the introduction, by the way, that was very nice, Adam. And February, I want to say 2020.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's just say you've been doing this for like over 2 years. And with all of the things that you've learned through your podcast, I want to find out, like, if you were speaking to yourself 2 years ago, like over 2 years ago, when you were thinking about starting a podcast, when you were preparing to start a podcast, when you were launching a podcast, like, do you wish you could go back and give yourself any other advice to make it easier or more streamlined? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I really believe that everything I've learned along the way has helped me get to where I am now. So if I could go back, I would keep it the same just because I think all of those lessons were really important. That said, it wasn't all easy and there were frustrating things along the way. But when I started, I figured out how to do my own editing. I figured out how to use all the platforms. So I was doing it all on my own, you know, how to do all the promotional content. And thankfully now I'm working with you. So you guys are helping me with all of that. But I think that was really necessary for me to get up the curve and feel confident that I could do that if I needed to. I know we were chatting a little bit before you hit the record button, and I said that I would have liked to have gotten my launch off a little more, with a little more gusto, like really gone for it. But that said, at the time, I think I would have freaked myself out if I had overthought it. Like putting all that pressure on myself at that time may have led to me being like, oh, I don't want to do this. So for me, it was more like taking these like little steps forward. If I were to give myself any advice, it would just be patient, because I did have this idea in my mind that things were going to happen really quick, that maybe some of these bigger guests that I wanted were going to want to come on my show when I had like minimal downloads and no social media presence. I just thought maybe that would happen. And along the way, there were a lot of no thank yous in the beginning, and which ultimately turned into more yeses and more visibility. So I think patience was key.
I've got so many questions on that. Okay. First and foremost, you said that all of the lessons were important. You're glad that you learned it. You did the editing on your own. You did the promotion on your own. And you wouldn't change it going back. You're glad that you learned those things. So if I'm about to start a podcast, I haven't yet launched, but I'm listening to this show because I'm trying to get like good ideas. You said two things, and it sounds like both of them are good. One of the things you mentioned was, you can learn this on your own. You can make sure that you can efficiently do it, that it can fall back onto you if you ever need it. But you also mentioned that currently today, you've offloaded a lot of those hard things. You're more focused on like your strengths while outsourcing some of the other parts. So I'm brand new and I'm trying to decipher, how do I know if I'm going to need to learn to edit my own? have patience finding big guests, not do the gusto of the launch, but just kind of learn it as I go versus offload it in the beginning. Is there an answer that you think you would give to a different person about to start out? Is there a benefit or a con to either way?
Yeah, good question. I think it comes down to what your personal goals are. So what are you trying to accomplish with your podcast? What's your timeline? And what's your budget? How much can you spend on this project? So that's the biggest thing. You know, if I had a huge budget in the beginning, I would have gotten more help. So for me, it was about just navigating with where I was at. So I think that comes down to the financial piece is a big part of it. And then also, again, the timeline, like how quickly do you want to get up and running? Do you have the time to learn on your own? Or do you really need to get that expert advice to get up to speed quickly?
Okay. And for you, you said you wouldn't change it, though. Like you wouldn't change you doing some of the promotion, some of the editing, post-production, publishing. Why is that? What do you feel like you truly gained by doing those things before offloading them to somebody else?
Yeah, well, I learned a lot about my personal style and I was trying to see what works, what doesn't work. How do I want to come across? Because whenever you're offloading, you need to give guidance. It's still, you need to be able to make decisions on how you want to come across. What type of style do you want to present? And so I was still figuring that out. So I think it would have been really hard to offload when I didn't really know what I wanted yet. I was still learning and like navigating that. So that was important for me to just be able to try things and not put a lot of pressure on myself with it. So I wasn't paying somebody. So I was able to try things. If it didn't work, okay, I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to try something different. So that's for me, it was just part of my learning curve. And it really helped me figure out how I want to show up as a brand, as a presence, what is the message I want to put out there? And it was important that I came off in a positive way. And I knew I wanted my marketing and my promotion to lead with that, to lead with people feeling good. So it was trying to figure out how do I do that in this marketing world, which was interesting. And I did in the beginning, I talked with some different people who were talking about helping me potentially with promotion of the show, but their vision was different than my vision. So I think it was important again that I figured out what my vision was before I started working with you. So then it made things go a lot more smoothly.
Got it. I'm wanting to think about some of the timeline here. You started your podcast approximately 2 years before today, and you started working with a team like ours approximately a year into that. But I'm curious, like before you launched your podcast, had anyone told you, you got to have a show? Had anyone told you a show would help you? Had you specifically thought, oh, I need to have a podcast, but I'm not sure how to start? Was there like a month or a year or 2 years or 5 years where you were kind of like trying to make this decision before you jumped in a couple years ago?
So what happened, it was interesting. I had my fellowship week in Tucson, Arizona. I'm an integrative medicine fellow through Dr. Andrew Weil's program through the University of Arizona. So we were having our residential week. I was there with mostly other MDs. I was trained as a physician assistant, but mostly MDs were doing this program. And we had one little like breakout session talking about marketing. And I really didn't know anything about marketing at the time. I was in clinical practice. I didn't have this vision yet of my show and starting Live Greatly and all this stuff. So they talked about that if you want to market yourself, there are some different ways to do it. You could start a blog, you could start a podcast. And I had never listened to a podcast. I was like, podcasting, interesting. And I started on that fellowship week to think about, well, what do I want to do with my bigger vision? And ultimately, I had been thinking about getting into the speaking space. And I thought to myself, well, okay, if I want to get into the speaking space, seems like podcasting might be a really great way to get some practice, to get confident on air. And so that's kind of where that seed got planted. I was chatting with some friends on that trip. And then I came back and remember I went to Barnes and Noble's and like bought a book about podcasting and read through it. And I talked with my husband and my brother-in-law, his girlfriend, and my in-laws over Christmas break about it. And I was like, what do you think? Do you think maybe this could happen? And and then I was like, all right, I'm going to reach out to people in the community. I'm going to see if anybody has a podcast. And people were really helpful. And I talked with some podcasters, got some great advice, and found out our local library had a media center. And the person in there knew about podcasting. So he helped me navigate some of this stuff and helped me get off the ground and get started. So it was, it was just like taking that first step and then, all right, what's next? What's next? And here I am.
Okay, a couple quick questions then. I love this. I love this. So when was that? Before, how long did you say the fellowship was where you were with all the physician assistants and medical doctors?
When were we there? So, I remember I was chatting with over Christmas break is when I was talking with family about it. So it must have been, I think it was like October.
So it was, or it November. Was just a couple of months.
Yeah, it was like
it wasn't weeks and it wasn't years. It was just a couple months.
It was it was soon. Yeah, it was like okay, that was cool. When I started thinking about it. Yeah,
nice. And so your goal was to become more of a speaker, get into that space. You went to Barnes and Noble, got that book, read it, liked it, started talking to friends, family, and other people that you met that knew podcasting. I'm very curious if you could share with the listener. What is the best advice that you had gotten from somebody when you were asking from other podcasters? And what was the worst advice that you had gotten from somebody?
Well, I think the worst advice was the mic I was originally using, which I was told was the best one. And now after I have a new one, I'm like, man, I sounded echoey.
Yeah.
Okay. And I listened to my old episodes. I'm like, ooh, that audio doesn't sound good, but that was supposed to be the best mic. So that was something that I would change. Actually, you asked me before, would I change something? Actually, I would change the mic if I knew in the beginning. So that wasn't great. And then the best advice, I think the best help that I got was from the library and the person who worked there. He was wonderful and he really helped me navigate learning Audacity and uploading and editing. And I had no background whatsoever with any of that. So I was really a little intimidated or a lot of intimidated by it. And he made me feel very comfortable and was able to be patient with me as I was learning it, which helped me ultimately be able to do it on my own, which was great.
Awesome. And I think that it's notable, and I'll try to make sure that my team who's listening and editing this right now does me a giant favor. And actually, it's for the listener. Does the listener a giant favor and puts in, we did two episodes where we talked about different like microphones that you could use and good microphones. And the big takeaway is basically dynamic versus condenser mic. And I think you had a Blue Yeti when we started working. Is that true?
I did.
Okay. And and I know, Crystal, you don't want to bash Blue Yetis.
I don't.
But I absolutely will. And they've probably, the listeners probably heard me say it before. But Blue Yeti is a condenser mic. So you're going to hear lots of different stuff. And I think the one that you're using now is about $100. It's less money than the Blue Yeti.
It works better.
I love that. That's good stuff. So I think that's really good. Best advice was tools to use and how to use them to kind of get this going, like uploading everything, editing everything. Worst advice was the suggestion of this certain microphone that was a condenser microphone and ended up sounding kind of hollow or echoey.
Because I didn't have a studio. Yeah, if I had a studio, that'd be one thing. But, you know, recording from my home, it wasn't the right mic for me, given the situation, which I didn't know that. So that was the tricky piece. Like, I didn't have anything to really compare it to at the time.
And you really sound really good. And I can see that in the room that you're recording in, it looks like it's bare floor, like wood floors. You got a lot of walls. So you got windows. There's not a ton of, like, furniture that would stop the echo. So I bet you the room is naturally echoey on its own, but you don't hear all that with the mic that you're using.
Right. Very good true. Stuff.
All right. So you talked about having patience with big guests. So I'm a listener today. I'm listening to you mention that. And I'm wondering, is it important to have big listeners? She wanted big listeners, but she learned that she had to have patience because they didn't say yes right away. So do I ought to have to focus on the most famous people ever? Or where's kind of the balance there? What should I be thinking as a new podcaster of, like, if I should have guests at all, if they should be big guests, small yeah. guests, whatever. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to figure out, what are your goals? What are you trying to share? What messages do you want to share? And then you go from there. Personally, I reached out to people that I knew in the beginning, because that made me more comfortable as I was getting used to the podcasting space. And it's easier. You know, you have friends, colleagues, they're more likely to say yes as you're getting off the ground with this new project. So that's what I did. And I had a lot of resources through my fellowship, different teachers, and I had a lot of people in my fellowship who are doing really, really incredible things. So I just reached out to them. I was like, hey, you want to come on my show? Remember I talked to you about this during fellowship week? And so that worked out for me. And then I asked family, and they would make recommendations based on people that they knew. And that's how I started. I had certain people that I thought that would be really neat to have them on. So that was kind of in my mind of like, ooh, I would really love to have a conversation with this person or that person. And so that's kind of where I found I needed the patience, because I had already this idea of like, ooh, I would love to have that person on, but their PR agent wanted to know all of my numbers, because you're not like emailing that person's, you know, personal email. You're going through their PR agent, and they wanted certain criteria to be met before they would say yes to coming on my show. So that's, for me, it was like, all right, well, we'll get there. You know, I didn't, I tried at least to not stress out about it. And it was more just having fun along the way and reaching out to people. From, you know, it depends what you're doing. No, it definitely doesn't have to be anyone that is famous by any means, but just people who are going to bring value to your audience. I mean, that's, I think, what it really comes down to.
I got a lot from that. So first and foremost, we got to decide what our goal is. And I was with this engineer once, and he's told me never to say reverse engineer. So I will try not to say that. But once you decide where you want to go, you got to figure out, reverse engineer, how are you going to get there? What are the steps in order to make this happen? But you got to kind of like decide that destination. And it's like if you're going on a road trip and you don't have a destination, it's going to be pretty hard to go anywhere. So you've got to at least figure out where you're going, map it all out, figure out where you're going to stop for gas, for food, for sleeps, and then you can make that happen. But you got to figure out where it is first. You mentioned that big guests aren't essential, but adding value to the podcast is essential. And then you also mentioned that you worked with a PR agency. So I'm listening and I'm like thinking, okay, I'm going to be patient. I don't need to have that big guest right away. But if I do need to get a big guest, how do I get them? Is it expensive working with a PR agency? Is it free working with a PR agency? Like, and also, who can we get if we work with some type of PR agency on our podcast?
I did not personally work with any PR agency. So I didn't pay for my podcast, at least. I was working with a PR person more for TV appearances and stuff, but not for my show. But what I did do is I connected with a lot of PR agents. So I connected on LinkedIn, which was a great space for connecting with PR agents. And then they, you know, they would see in my profile that I have my show, this is what I do. I actually, after connecting with certain PR agents, started getting pitched more guests. So that was really great. But I developed relationships with these PR agents over time. And that just kind of happened, again, through the initial like reach out with a message. Make sure if you are reaching out to someone, you do a personalized message. Don't just click the connect request. Or you could, but you might not get the connection. So that was the first step, was just making those connections. But then also, if I wanted a certain guest on, I would figure out who their PR agent was. And I would reach out to their PR agent with my pitch. And, you know, if you're looking to have a guest on, play around with your pitch, see what works. And I know now where I'm at, I get a lot of pitches for my show, and certain ones, I don't want to read it. Like, it's just like, if it's too dense and there's like too much information, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just a little overwhelming. So I have found what I like to receive as far as pitches. And then I've tried to tailor my pitches to that angle where, like, I'm getting the really catchy things up front that'll grab their attention. Always mention if you have a personal connection with the person you're asking to come on, whether it's, you know, we have some mutual connections who are, these are the people that are, we have mutual connections. They've been on my show. That always helps. So if you have a guest on, you can see, who are they connected with? Who's following them on social media? Are any of those people, would they be great guests? And then, you know, maybe I'll reach out to them. Oh, I just had this person on my show. I see you're connected. I'd love to have you on. So I think it's just a navigating it, remembering that you're talking to a human being, and don't be a robot about it. Just be, try and like take a deep breath, be natural. I think that's what works best for me when I'm receiving pitches. If it's like someone's talking to me in a comfortable way, less like, I guess, like I said, less like a robot, more like a person.
I got so many notes from that. All right. If we are thinking, I want to have big guests, we don't necessarily have to go and pay PR agents to bring guests on our show. But a good thing to do that you did, Crystal, is that you are on LinkedIn and you organically, naturally, slowly started connecting with different people who are PR agents for different people. And you used a private personal message when connecting with them. And the thoughts that we need to, the things that we need to be thinking of when we're connecting with people like this, whether it's the person we want on our show or the PR agent for the person that we want to have on our show, is to play around with your pitch, see what works, make sure it's a personalized message. Remember that you're talking to a human being. And my thoughts are, when we're playing around with this personal message, it sounds like you're saying you get overwhelmed when it's too much. So basically, less is more. And then the other takeaway that I got was, you want it to have some type of hook, grabbing the attention, being catchy up front. So short and sweet, personal, but it needs to have something that's going to grab the attention of the reader almost right away, it sounds like you're saying. Mm-hmm. Can you share with us just one different PR agent or person who ended up coming on your show, like just the process that you got to get that one person? How did that work?
So I'm thinking of one. I'm not going to do any names or anything, but I'm thinking of this one PR agent that I connected with over LinkedIn. And she's wonderful. Her and I, our relationship has like gotten to the point where I feel like I get a message from her at least like once a month about something at this point. And I can't remember how I found her. I think I just did a search for like PR agents. And then I was kind of looking to see, okay, what type of field are they in? And I reached out to connect. And then shortly after, I received a pitch from her pitching three like big guests, which I was like, oh, this is amazing. And since then, you know, she's reached out whenever she's had a very like notable guest. And I'd say I've taken about 90% of the people she's pitched, because she just covers such amazing, amazing individuals. But it was just a very organic, I don't know, natural relationship, where I think the biggest piece of it as a podcaster is also recognizing what value are you bringing to the guest. So letting them know, like, this is how I'm going to help get this person's message out there. And that's going to vary based on where you're at. So depending on if you have a social media platform, if you do mention that, you know, what's your reach? Are you ranked? What's your ranking? And any other really notable pieces that a PR agent will see is like, oh, that's good publicity for my client. And that's what you want to put front and center. And then also, as I said, put in that piece of like, if you have any mutual connections, because that's that personal piece that people really respond to as well.
Okay. So you connect with her on Facebook.
LinkedIn.
One part of your approach was kind of like not aggressive, not overwhelming, not too much, not forceful. You just were more of like a lighthouse, a beacon. You were who you were. You stood for what you were doing, and you let her kind of come to you. And now she's giving you a great person almost every month, and you're taking like 90% of them. And these are just great guests for you, and you don't pay her anything for that?
No, I haven't paid any PR agents to get guests on my show. Mm-mm.
And a couple pieces that helped you get there is she knows that your podcast is in the top 1% ranked in the world. She knows that that you have a certain following on some of your social. She knows what it is that you do. And so you've intentionally let her know the notable publicity, like what is going to happen when that person comes on your show. And the other takeaway was that you made sure that as you're reaching out to her or others like her, is any mutual connections that you have, like, and I've done that on different socials as well. Like when I'm connecting with somebody, I might have my first message. Hey, I noticed that you're connected with these three people, so I thought I would connect with you. We probably have something in common, or I might even ask, how do you know, how did you get to know Crystal Bauer? She's awesome. I really respect her. How did you get to know her? And then that could be like the first message that we send to somebody like this.
Yeah, I think what I have found personally, I don't do this for LinkedIn, because LinkedIn, I think there's a lot of connections where you don't really know the people, you know, like it's just, they've asked for you to connect for whatever reason. Maybe you're in the same space, but you've never had a conversation. So I don't do that for LinkedIn, but I do pay attention to this on Instagram, where I'll check people's Instagram pages and I'll see who are they following, you know, and this is again for more, for some of the guests who have bigger visibility. And I then will look like, oh, have I had any of those people on my show? So if I'm trying to get to a big guest and I have to go through their PR agent to get them on, I will say in my pitch to this PR agent, oh, this guest that I want to have on, it looks like we have some mutual connections. These are who they are. I've had them on my show. So that's how I like to use it.
I like that. That's great. So see who they're kind of following, see who they're connected with, especially one or two or three of them have already been on your show. That adds a ton of credibility. And then they're like, oh, wow, she's had these three people that I know on her show. Who else do I know that I could get on her show that's kind of similar to them? Yes. I think that's really smart.
I have one more little piece of advice, because this really helped me. And this was like something that just clicked for me recently. So I was reaching out to try and get a very big guest on. And I reached out to their PR agent and I got a no, and it wasn't the nicest no. Like I've gotten no's said in different ways. Some I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine. And some I'm like, ooh, that was a little rough, you know, just like very kind of dry. So it was a response where at first I was like, oh, okay. And then I thought, well, how do I want to handle this? How do I want to respond to this? And so I decided I was going to try something a little different. And I responded saying, thank you so much for letting me know. You know, if you have anyone else that you're working with that you think would be a great fit for my show, feel free, you know, to reach out. And so I was like, let's see what happens. Within 10 minutes, I got a response. Well, how about this person or this person or this person? I was like, what? And these were great, great guests that weren't even on my radar. So it really just showed, like, try and keep the door open. If you reach out and you get a no, you can also say, oh, would there be a better time to reach out? Or so just try and like see if you can keep the conversation going.
So I read this book. Okay, I'm lying. I listened to this book. It can't be counted as reading if you're dyslexic and you only listen to it. But the point is, I got the information from this book. It was literally called Go For No. And apparently, like, getting to the no, is there's a lot of benefit to that, especially if you do what Crystal just said. Especially if when you get a no and it's not the nicest no, she just says, hey, thank you for letting me know. If there's ever anyone else, feel free to let me know. If there's anyone else that you think should come on my show, feel free to let me know. And you were able to take, I would say most of us as human beings would be like, F that person. Okay, I'm done. But you were like, hey, thanks for letting me know. If there's ever anyone else, let me know. And you kept the door open. And as a result, you got these three other really good people. And I don't know if you've had that one person that was a not nice no come on the show yet, but it sounds like you're probably closer to it because you worked with these other few people. So go for no and don't be afraid of no. I sold door to door. Crystal, I don't know if you knew this. I sold door to door for several years in a row. And in the beginning, some days you'll talk to 100 people and all of them will say no. And it's overwhelming. It's scary. You're putting yourself out there. You're getting, it feels like it's personal. But if we can stay positive and go through any of these no's from door-to-door selling or from connecting with potential guests and keep it positive, keep it polite, keep it respectful, you can make lemonade out of lemons sometimes, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's so true. I know. And it's just sometimes taking a pause, like don't necessarily give yourself a moment before you automatically respond, especially if you don't hear what you want to hear. So that was like the big thing for me, is like taking that moment, like, oh, I have a choice here. What do I want to do with this? You know, it's an opportunity. So I'm impressed that you did the door to door, Adam. That's hard. I can't imagine that.
The benefit was that in summer, you could make like the same amount as some of your friends who worked all year round. And so you could like make some money quickly, but now it was hot. It was difficult. It was challenging. And I ultimately gave up after 6 years of doing it. I said, not another door. I won't knock on another single door, but not to be impressive, but to make sure that there is a piece of this that is beneficial to all of us. Is that by being okay with a no, go for no, the book, or just knowing that if you stay positive, there was times that I would get like 99, literally, I'm not exaggerating this, in one day, I would get like 99 plus people saying no. I would knock on at least 100 doors and never sell anything. And then you would knock on that next door and you would be like, how do I get back into the positive attitude? How do I not let any of that stuff faze me? And still call the next person and still message the next person and still knock on the next door and have your pitch with your attitude of basically assuming the sale, being okay, being happy, being positive. Because when you do that and somebody gives you a not nice no, and you can follow it up with positivity, politeness. Thanks for letting me know. If there's anyone else, feel free to let me know. I love that. I love that takeaway. My team, my company, when we have a client tell us something that we did wrong, which happens, I always tell them, hey, at least thank them for letting us know that thing. So like, we are appreciative and now we want to fix it. Thanks for letting us know. Now we want to fix it. And I think that's just a great takeaway in life with your spouse, you know, your partner, your business partner, and anyone that we're talking about in order to make a sale or to be better at our jobs or to speak on more stages or get somebody on our podcast. I think there's a lot there. Crystal, there's a couple things that I really want to talk about.
Okay.
And so you got booked on what are these called? A TED Talk. You did a TED Talk, and I would venture to say half the people listening today, they probably are interested in doing a TED Talk. So I'm just curious, like, did your podcast help the TED Talk? Did the TED Talk help the podcast? Yes or no, and which one? And also, if we want to do a TED Talk, what is kind of a path that we might be able to go in?
Whew. All right. Well, I don't know if the podcast helped the TEDx talk. Maybe. I think that the more you build up your platforms, I would think it could only help with you landing some of these gigs. The TEDx talk for me, I pitched myself multiple times for different TEDx ones, and maybe 6 or 7. I mean, not crazy amounts, maybe more. I can't remember, but I went on the TED site and it shows you where the TEDx talks are going to be. And I would reach out to the facilitators or whoever was organizing the event. I would do a formal pitch if they were accepting a formal pitch. But in addition, I would connect again with that facilitator on LinkedIn or whatever social media they had. And I would let them know or ask them a question. Like, I see you're hosting an event. You know, I'm interested in speaking. I just submitted my application. Or if there's not a link to submit an application, are you accepting applications? When are you accepting applications? So what happened with the one I actually got, I saw that it was in Chicago at Wolcott Prep, and I saw it and I was like, oh, I don't see a link for applications. I wonder if they've accepted, have they already chosen their speakers? I connected with the person heading up their event on LinkedIn. I messaged him. He's like, oh, it's your lucky day. We're accepting them like through, I think it was through tomorrow or something. Like, I had like a day. So I'm like, oh, I'll get it right over. So I submitted my pitch, and typically they want a little video clip. You really want to give a lot of thought to your headline. How is it going to be catchy? How are you going to bring value to them, to their stage? They typically will have some sort of theme. So how can you really angle it to their theme and something unique? And so I did that, and yeah, I found out I got the email I had gotten selected, which was super exciting. So it was, I got no's before I got that yes. And I think just stick with it and try, and if maybe one pitch or one angle isn't working or you're getting a lot of no's, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not a good topic. It could just not be the best topic for their theme. But if it's just you keep getting no's, it might be time to rethink that headline to really make it stand out and make it really catchy. And I would also say to listen to other TEDx talks, see which ones are really taking off. I had a great mentor who helped me, who did a TED talk, not the TEDx, but like the TED. And he's had, his views are like crazy. And so we chatted a lot, but he's like, you know, you really want this to your headline. That's the big piece. Like, they want something that is going to stand out. So I would just advise you, if you're looking to do a TEDx talk, to really focus on getting a really strong hook and headline.
This is super valuable. Couple things is, you weren't daunted by a no, or even 6 or 7 no's. You didn't quit. I believe most human beings would be sad after the first one. They might be like, oh, that's too bad. Maybe I'm not cut out for a TED Talk. But you did it a second one. You tried a third one. They said no, and you're still dauntless. You dated a fourth one, a fifth one, a sixth one, and you got maybe a seventh no before you went and finally got the yes. And I have a feeling that if you got an eighth no, you would be still trying after.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big thing to take away, is being relentless, not giving up, persisting, being determined, and keep going, trying something a little bit new. Other takeaways, a book called The 10X Rule, I think I listened to, by Grant Cardone. He's basically saying, try everything, do everything, do different types of marketing, connect with other people. And you basically, that's what you do. This is like, you are relentless. You don't quit. You persist. You connect with people. Instead of just doing the thing, you also connect with the human being one-on-one. So there's a lot of takeaways that if our listener who is a podcaster or about to be a podcaster wants to be successful in that thing, they got it. I think part of it is just putting in the work, putting in the reps like you have over time. And that's one of the reasons that you got through. You also were able to cater some of this toward the TED Talk, TEDx Talk. For example, you did your recon so that you could stand out. You made sure you had a good hook. You made sure you had a unique angle. You added value. You had a good headline. You were always prepared. So as soon as that person said yes, you're like, okay, it's ready. Here you go. There are just so many things that I'm taking from this. You listen to other TED Talks so that you could understand what it is that they're looking for and how do you make that. So it's not just like trying it once. You were knocking on these 100 doors that day. You had 99 no's and you still went to the next one. It's just great.
And I also asked for feedback too. So I had applied for TEDx Chicago originally. And I connected with the coordinator. I actually had like a couple calls with her, one Zoom, one phone. And I was so excited when, like, I think it was the first one I submitted for TEDx Chicago way before I got this one. And she wanted a phone call. I was like, oh, this is going to happen. But it didn't. But I, regardless, was really excited. But I asked for feedback. You know, I wanted to know, like, what are they looking for? So I think if you're able to open the door of conversation via email, or if you do get that phone call, really try and figure out what they're looking for as a team. And if there's a way, maybe you could have angled it a little differently.
So much good stuff. I really appreciate it. I wanted to get into how you were featured in Forbes. But we are going to save that for another episode since we're about at that time where we have our next appointments. But we'll make sure you come back on. We'll talk about how you got into Forbes, how other people can get into Forbes, because that's also very, very interesting. If you're listening and you like what Crystal's doing, I do too. And you can find her podcast. It is Live Greatly. Scroll down. That link is already in the show notes. It's ranking worldwide in the top 1% on many different fronts. She is just crushing it, adding a ton of value. And I will be honest with you listening. I feel lucky to know Crystal. And there have been times that I wanted some different thoughts and advice in like health and wellness. And she's just been such a good person to go to for that. And a lot of that's in her podcast. So check it out, scroll down, click. And if you give her a rating and review, an honest written rating, let her know you heard about her here. And I'll see you on the next episode. Thanks again, Crystal.
Thanks, Adam. So fun.
You know, I really don't say this nearly enough. I don't mention this and I feel horrible because it's a great resource for you to be able to take your podcast to the next level. And it's simply a free resource that I don't need your email or anything. It's just a podcasting course that I created that is ended up putting in the very first 6 episodes of this podcast. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely going to want to just check out those first 6 episodes, see how they can help you improve your podcast, get in front of more people, and have a better result where you're making more money through the podcast, etc. So much can happen after you listen through episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So if you haven't done it, go do it now. And by the way, if you're subscribed, you'll keep hearing more great content. So to those of you who are, I'll see you on the next episode.